Cincinnati.
Welcome to episode 248 of Cincinnati, the UK Bengals, UK from the UK Bengals fans podcast. Hello and welcome. We've been off for a couple of weeks, but we're back. And I must warn you, like a man who has consumed too much Viagra and corn flour, we're going to be coming thick and fast in the next couple of weeks. We've got our draft coverage kicking off, and going to use this episode really just to set the scene, really, to get going, to get in. You're all probably out there knee-high into draft stuff as we speak, but we're going to start properly now. As you know, every year we try and have a good couple of three in-depth episodes on the draft, because obviously it's a big thing. We've just had free agency. That will kind of continue, easy for me to say, in dribs and drabs throughout the summer. And but the draft is the big thing now. We're going to be having our usual British draft panel coming up. We've got Joe Goodberry as well, pre-draft. And in this episode, I'm delighted to say that making his debut on Cincinnati is PFF's Sam Monson. So, with all that being said, let's not forget my co-host, who will also be coming thick and fast with me, is Nathan Palmer.
I start to feel a bit inferior, all these names you're throwing about here, Sam. And, you know, don't forget about the OG.
Exactly. I can never forget about the OG. That's you, though, isn't it? That is you.
How could I?
But it's kind of an interesting time of year, isn't it? It's exciting. It's when people who claim to know what they're talking about post clips of film on Twitter, and everyone's an armchair GM, everyone's an armchair scout. But we're going to say, heads up, we look at it, we get excited. I think it's fair to say, Nathan, isn't it, we get excited about the draft, but we're not there watching every single moment of every prospect's, you know, pro day or whatever. So we are coming at it from that angle, and we're going to be learning with you, because there is an absolute avalanche of names and prospects and universities and arm lengths and, you know, 40 yard dash times and all sorts of things coming your way, and it can get a bit overwhelming, I think. We always try and demystify it a little bit and de-twatticize it, I suppose. That's probably the best way of saying it. But it is a fun time of year, Nathan, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the ultimate outcome from this is these are guys that you're looking at that could be the foundation of this team for the next 5, 8, maybe even longer in terms of years for their contribution to the team. And I think it's always one where because there's not much going on in the off-season, it's very easy to fall in love with prospects and watch a lot of their tape. And I think more than ever, the one thing I've been seeing, I don't know about you, Sam, on Twitter and certainly in the press, has been people sort of fantasizing and dreaming over the Bengals trading around. I've never seen so many, including national press as well, people talking about them giving up one of their additional picks they've got this year, using T. Higgins as a bit of trade bait. There's a lot of schools of thoughts there, both moving up and down, which I think only adds a bit of spice to the situation there as well. So certainly all at play. And when you're picking in the middle of the round, again, it opens up a lot of, you know, prospects could be falling down to you. You've got, you know, potentially the option of getting a top 10 talent at 18. It may be unlikely, but not impossible. So you can see why people's appetites are where they are.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's a really fascinating spot, isn't it? 18, because it's not like you say, it's not in the upper echelons of the draft order, but neither is it down the bottoms. It was sort of somewhere in between, and we've been there before plenty of times. The Bengals don't normally trade up, but you never know with this regime. They have done things a little bit differently, but yeah, they're in line for 10 picks this year. I would not be surprised if they used a couple of them at certainly the back end to package and to kind of move themselves up and down the board a little bit. I wonder if they're going to package any day two picks into something. I don't know. We'll see. But all that is to be discussed. I say Sam Monson is coming up a little bit later. But Nathan, I've got a new game for us to play.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Soup or Poop, basically, and and it's a reference to your love of soup, even though the seasons are changing. The spring has definitely sprung over there, and I know in Cincinnati that there's some pretty awful weather, I have to say, some pretty stormy storms, some real Stormy Daniels everywhere, and but spring has sprung a little bit over here, and it's not really soup season.
Yeah, only thought about that.
Well, that's trash. Soup is not just for Christmas, isn't it? It's for life, I would say.
So in spring, you can have it in the winter, you can have it in the autumn. I think maybe in the summer it's not your go-to, but
Yeah, but
apart
then
from
you could
that,
swap it out and have gazpacho. Have you ever had
well,
gazpacho?
I have. I'm not a big fan of
You're not.
expat
Okay,
chase,
fair
but yeah.
enough. But yes, anyway, so this game, soup or poop. It's basically good news, bad news. Good news is soup, bad news is poop. And it's basically, Nathan, we're going to clear up all the news, hoover up all the news, and we're going to get your opinion on it. Is each news item soup or is it poop? And guess what, Nathan? I've gone and done a theme tune. So let's play soup or poop.
Welcome to the show, it's time to go. Get ready for a challenge, don't be slow. We've got a game that'll make you go. It's called Soup or Poop, let's start the show. Here's how it goes, you gotta use your nose. We'll give you a smell and you gotta choose. Oh, is it a tasty soup or a stinky poop? Guess right and you'll be the winner. Delicious broth or something gross. Soup or poop, that's the way we roll.
There we go. Soup or poop. Is it a delicious broth or something gross, Nathan? That's what we're asking. So the first bit of news I'm asking you whether, and God bless artificial intelligence. I know it gets a bad rap, but listen to that. That is surely a work of art, I think, worthy of a number one single, I think. Right, Nathan. Trent Brown has signed a 1 year deal. I'm going to play right tackle. It was an astonishingly cheap deal. I think it was about 4.5 million. So the Bengals have done well there. I'm saying it's soup. What are you saying?
No, without question, a delicious soup, some chilies thrown in there, you know, steaming hot, full of flavor, a delicious soup.
Well, there we go. Yeah, I agree. Just what we needed, eh? I mean, it went a bit quiet, and then it was like, wow, yes, we finally got our man or a man. I think, and I was happy with it. I've been banging the Trent Brown drum a little bit, but of course, you know, you look at his record and he hasn't stayed on the field for full seasons, but yeah, he's still going to be a pretty reliable in terms of level of play when he does play. I thought it was a good bit of business, really.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to the Bengals' narrative around wanting to win now and not just relying on the draft. Because, again, whoever you get in the draft, you don't really want to rely on them to have to go in day one and start a right tackle. And then, again, who's, you know, backing that person up? So it gives you a nice bit of flexibility there to start Trent Brown at right tackle. And then, obviously, if you are going to draft someone rounds one or two, you can then sort of rotate them in and sort of bring them in slowly. So I think it's a great sign. I think he's got better upside than Jonah in some ways. And on a deal like that, like you said before, it's almost a no-brainer and fills a really big gap that they had before. So I'm very, very happy with it. It's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's concerning, but, you know, a lot of these deals, like the one-year deals, like the Kosicki deal as well, it's great to have these players for a year. The only thing is it puts you under quite a bit of pressure to make sure that you're drafting the right talent to replace them. Because the problem is if you get a right tackle, you get a tight end in the draft, and they're not quite up to scratch, the position then is, you know, you sort of, in a bit of a halfway house as to how to sort of transition forward as a team. But I'm really happy with Brown at right tackle. Very, very happy indeed. Huge guy, obviously, size-wise as well. Him and Orlando Brown, some real, you know, some serious weight, height, whatever else, in front of Joe Burrow. So, yeah, very pleased indeed.
Next, soup or poop. DJ Reader had an interview with Kay Adams on her breakfast show Up and Adams, saying that the Bengals didn't really make much of an effort, really. They put an offer on the table when free agency started, but the fact is he was going in there and rehabbing at Paycor every day, and they didn't really have any discussions, and then it was all a bit too late. And of course, DJ has to look after DJ, really. So, I mean, I think we both know what we're going to give that news story.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
Say it, Nathan. I want to hear you say it.
Poop.
There you go.
It's a disappointing outcome, I think, for all Bengals fans. We all wanted DJ back. I don't think the price in the end the Lions paid was particularly ridiculous, but you just got to, I guess, the Bengals have a vision there. They think that they're going to want to get younger at the position. They've brought in Sheldon Rankings, who's a good player in his own right, good pass rusher, but they're going to have to look here at the draft and say, right, who are we going to get to come in and replace him? And maybe that's Byron Murphy, you know, not necessarily a pass rushing guy, a bit more of a does the dirty work in the middle, a bit like DJ Reader, you know, not the flashiest in terms of stats.
What I've seen, he is a pass rusher. He's more of a three technique though than a nose tackle, Nathan. That's the problem.
His stats though, like, you know, he only five sacks, I think he had Byron Murphy for Texas. So it's not like he's absolutely flying to the quarterback. He does do a bit of plugging some gaps and filling up holes and things like that. But yeah, I mean, we're going to need someone desperately to replace what DJ had there, whether that's in the draft or as another guy, you know, a couple of guys they want to bring in still in free agency. I mean, Sheldon Rankin's a great player and, you know, BJ Hill's solid, you know, good in rotation. He's played well when he's needed to. It was a good trade for us to get him from the Giants. But yeah, I think it's a shame. Players like pride is always going to be hurt when, you know, they feel like they've given their all for a team and the team isn't that active in pursuing them. And the ugly side of the NFL in some ways is it's a very ruthless business, and, you know, players can give all they want for a team. They can sacrifice their body, as DJ Reader has in that game against the Vikings where he tore his quad. And I think it's going to be disheartening, a place that you've called home, that, you know, you've given your, you know, your heart and soul, blood, sweat and tears, quite literally, for the team, to just be said, well, yeah, we're not that fussed, you know, a bit of a low ball offer, off you go to Detroit. So, you know, you can understand his slight negativity or his attitude in that interview. It's fair enough. You know, I think we'd all be the same if our employer did that to us and you've gone above and beyond for them and done a really good job. So it's a shame. But I mean, if you're a Detroit Lions fan, I'd be elated and over the moon with getting someone like DJ Reader on a pretty good deal, barring the fact that you know, he has got some, you know, the injury is going to hold him back, or he's not going to quite be the player he was. And obviously, you know, he's getting up there, you know, nearly into his 30s now. But yeah, if he plays anywhere near he did for us and he did for the Texans, I think you got yourself a stellar player. And I think it's pretty bad decision from us to let him walk for that price. But, you know, we've got to trust the process.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to widen it out now to the NFL as a whole. Don't worry, not going to. Well, we can safely say that the NFL UK's tweets during the off season and actually all season are poop. But we're going to talk about Stephon Diggs. He's been traded from the Bills to the Texans, and Texans are in it to win it. Nathan, do you like that move? I mean, looking at what they had to give up, it wasn't loads. I wonder, the Bills are. Look pretty desperate to get rid of Diggs there. They're eating $30 million in dead cap space. So, what are you saying about the Stephon Diggs trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's sexy pick this year is the Texans, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of people saying that they're going to be very dangerous. You add his presence in there. Along with what CJ Stroud was doing, and it is quite concerning. I mean, I think the AFC is just so strong, and I know obviously it's, you know, a player going within the AFC, so he's not, you know, transitioning over here. The only thing I'd say with Diggs is he's 30, and typically with wide receivers, you do see a little bit of a drop off. He had a bit of a drop off last year, Stephon Diggs. He's sort of down from his sort of 1,400, 1,500 yard seasons, double digit touchdowns to 1,108 touchdowns. Still fantastic numbers, and he's a great player. But the only thing I would say is obviously the Bills lost Gabe Davis as well. So their receiving core is going to be very different looking to what it has been in the past. Both very good players for different reasons. But. The Texans are going to be a force. Obviously, lucky they're not in our division. But yeah, if Stroud can progress onwards with the talent that they've brought in around him, it's going to be quite a scary prospect because they've got a fairly good defence as well. So shows you, doesn't it, what bringing in, you know, within what a year or two can do. Because 2 years ago, the Texans were, you know, a really poor team and you wouldn't have thought much of them at all. So you've got to give a lot of credit to what D'Amico Ryans has done there to turn that around very quickly. And that is the beauty of the NFL, isn't it? We saw it with Joe Burrow, how you can quite easily go from not being a contender to being a really sexy bums in seats type of contender. So there you go.
The NFL have announced new kickoff rules, amongst other things. Soup or poop, Nathan?
Oh, poop, 100%.
Really?
I just think that a lot of these things, that are we talking about the hip drop tackling here as well?
Well, no, let's do that. Let's do it as a two-parter.
Okay.
So the first part, the kickoff returns. I'm going to say soup for that one.
Tell me more about it, because I've seen people talk about it, and loads of people, even like me watching it and stuff, I don't fully get it. So I don't...
You're asking me to do an explainer. I'm not very good at explainers. Right, so basically... I'm reading this off the week.com. The change has to do with where the players will position themselves prior to the kickoff. Like before, the kicking team's kicker will continue to kick from the 35-yard line, but rather than be flanked by his teammates, the rest of the kicking team will line up at their opponent's 40-yard line, right?
What?
This eliminates the running head start typically seen during kickoffs, you know, the gunners and all that kind of stuff. They're sort of taken out of the game a little bit. Meanwhile, the returning team will field up to two returners in the backfield, and the rest of the team will line up in a new setup zone between the 30 and 35 yard line. So you're going to have like two lines of players, more or less like 5 yards apart. Only the kicker and returners will be allowed to move until a returner touches the ball or the ball hits the ground. This thereby eliminates the fair catch rule. And I think the kickers have to kick into a certain area, so they're not allowed to kick through the end zone either. So basically it's saying, we want a kickoff here. And actually, if you break through that line, if you can break through that line, you're gone. You're gone for a touchdown. I think that we're going to see a hell of a lot more touchdowns from kickoffs this year. And you're looking at, I think the Steelers signed Cordarrelle Patterson, who's a returning specialist. Quick running back style players might be good for this. You're looking at the Chiefs, though, because they've just signed Lewis, the Welsh rugby guy, Lewis. Because I've done one. Hold on.
So if you kick it through the, but you can't kick it for a touchback anymore.
No, that's right. Yeah. You can't kick it for a touchback. Yeah, anyway. Sorry, say again. I guess so, yeah. But it's down to the kickers to kick it into an area. I can't remember what the area is, but in front of the end zone. And then you've got two kickoff returners. You could do some fancy shit there. You could do some, like, fake sort of end arounds and kind of, you could hand it off to another person. And yeah, so the Chiefs assigned Lewis Rees-Samit, the Welsh rugby guy, because he's quick and he's fast. And I often wondered how he's going to make that team. What is he, a wide receiver or a running back? And it turns out he could be their wild card at the return position. Now, we have someone like a Chase Brown. We have someone like Charlie Jones. They could be our guys back there. Trayvon Williams did a bit returning last year. But who's to say Chase couldn't be back there for this sort of thing? I don't know. I think it's going to be really... So it's a big bowl of soup for me. I think it's going to be really quite exciting.
It'll be interesting because I feel like they've been trying to sort of phase out the kickoff game for a long time. I always do think sometimes the NFL's a bit too trigger happy to change things, but it'll be, yeah, I guess it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, the one thing I have to say with the NFL is, as much as I complain about all they try and change rules for the sake of it and there's too much change, it's almost the opposite that you see in like English football over here, and you know, the way that the sort of Premier League and leagues like that, they're very reluctant for change. You know, you've got the VAR stuff, but typically you know, they try and keep things the same. But the NFL is open to change. I think some of the change they make are good, the change they make are good, some are bad. We'll get onto one in a moment that I think's a disaster. But yeah, I guess at least they're open to progressing the game and trying to make it a more exciting product. Sometimes I think that there's a bit too much of a commercialization narrative behind some of these things to try and heighten scores. I think there was a load of reports that came out about all the number of points scored, you know, was slightly down this year and the last couple of years. Like, what can we do to try and, you know, increase scoring? And, you know, whilst you want to see teams score, you don't also just want it to turn into a basketball game where you're just up and down. And I know that can be exciting, but it's not, you know, that's not football, is it? You love a good strong defence and sacks, and, you know, some of those positional games around territories are, for purist fans, are fantastic. And I don't want to see them just turn it into, like I said, like a basketball type of operation where you just quarterbacks are throwing for 600 yards a game and it's all a bit too easy. So,
well, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, this could really shake things up. I, you know, as I say, it's going to produce a completely new kind of discipline, really. Yeah, we'll see. But yes, you mentioned the disastrous rule change, and I'm guessing you're giving the outlawing of the hip drop tackle a poop.
100%. Yeah. I just think it just adds so much controversy to refereeing decisions and to the outcome of games. And I watched that video that they played at the owners' meetings around sort of what sort of tackles would be deemed a hip drop and what wouldn't. And I think I'd like to say I'm a fairly knowledgeable fans, but have been watching the game for 20 years, and a lot of those, to me, just with the naked eye, looked fine. They looked like tackles you'd expect people to make, that didn't look particularly dangerous. I think when you're playing live speed and a player's running at you in a certain circumstance, you've got three guys coming at you from one angle, two from another, and you just got to grab onto someone where you've got a helmet on, a game's on the line. You'd hate for a game to be decided in that manner. Or a big, you know, big call in a big game, you know, change the course of it on, like, you know, third down or something. I just don't like handing that much more power to the officials over something that's, you know, going to be very much up for debate as to whether it is or it isn't a tackle like that. So I understand the narrative as well around trying to minimize injuries. You know, we've seen it so many times with fantastic players getting taken out of the game, and the NFL as a business wants its best players out there. It hates seeing people like Mark Andrews go down last year as a result of a tackle like that. You know, it wants its best players out there from a marketing perspective. And, you know, as to all the fans, you want your best players on the pitch making plays, but I'm just not sure that that's the best way to try and make that happen.
I just think it's going to be really difficult to police, you know. I think, you know, you'd really do feel sorry for the officials there because, yeah, there's some pretty explicit what you would call hip drop tackles. You know, they're quite easy to spot. But as you say, a live game speed when someone's, you know, tackling from behind, you know, and they get done for a hip drop tackle, then when it isn't, it's going to be really, it's really open to interpretation. I think Jay Morrison made the point on the growler that I wonder whether this is going to be more of a retroactive fine situation than a flag situation. You really hope so, because I mean,
yeah,
goodness me, there's going to be some real controversies this year.
If you just don't want more flags. Yeah, that's a great point from Jay. Like, if it's just a case of, you know, after the game, they turn around and say, right, Logan Wilson, you know, we think you've done this and you shouldn't have done, and we're trying to get rid of this type of tackle. That's going to cost you $15,000. You know, if you carry on doing it, you might get a game suspension. That's okay. It doesn't interrupt the flow of the game. It doesn't, you know, leave games open to being policed like that. But if it is, you know, 15-yard penalty, 10-yard penalty, you know, first down, that's where it's just going to be, like you said, it adds pressure to the officials, more flags during the game itself, slows things down. You know, it's the type of thing that if you were looking for a new person to get into the game, you know, imagine if you have a mate round and you say to him, oh, you know, watch this game with me, the Bengals are playing the Steelers, and a game was decided by that, or there was a big play in the game that was decided by that, it'd be an impossible one to explain to someone sat next to you. You know, if he tackles in this way and his hip does this and he drops his body weight, that's deemed as a penalty. It's just not a good look for attracting new fans more than anything else as well, I think. So, yeah, not a fan.
No, me neither. Right, grade this statement, Nathan. The Bengals are not done in free agency yet.
Probably correct, but I don't think you're going to get anyone that sexy coming in, are you? There's not many big names out there. It tends to be slightly older players that, you know, are probably going to wait and try to get out of going into a big intensive training camp and sign nearer to the time when people go down. But there's still some solid rotational pieces, aren't there? Anyone that you've got your eye on particularly, Sam?
Well, I think maybe some cornerback depth.
Fabian Howard would be great, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that's the name that, you know, he's got history with Anarumo. So Xavier Howard, perhaps. They do have money left, which leads me to my next comment or statement. Soup or poop, Nathan. Evan McPherson will be the first out of the golden generation to be extended before Chase, obviously before Higgins, but I think I might have a sneaky bet on Evan McPherson to be extended first.
Yeah, I dig soup on that. You're probably right. I mean, I think the Bengals got any extra money, they like to leave a bit, don't they? That'd be one to get done. There's no chance for a second that you let Evan McPherson go. He's a great player. He's done a cracking job for us. He's reliable. It's a position you probably don't need to address for 8 to 10 years based on his performance. So I think if there is any extra money knocking around, it'd be useful to get that deal done sooner rather than later.
Agreed. And I think let's have a quick look. Right, final super poop before we bring Sam in. A good cream of mushroom soup is better than a cream of tomato soup.
Absolute poop. Not a mushroom soup, no. Tomato soup all day long.
Really?
All day.
All day long. Well, okay. Well, I don't know, man. Bit of truffle pesto in there and all this and all that. Could be persuaded, but you can't. No. All right. Okay. Well, let's stop Super Poo. Do you reckon that's a keeper, Nathan, or just a one-off, do you think?
I think it's a cracking one if you've got a lot of different news to go through. It's a nice quick way to sort of dice through things, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it.
Since you know.
Well, there you go. We might bring that back at some stage. Just to say, we've got our 250th episode coming up soon. And get ready for some tribute songs. We've got a lot to sing. You never know. Apparently, Tyler Boyd's talks with the Steelers have not progressed, which is good news for everyone. So who knows where he's going to end up. But, you know, Mixon's gone, Reader's gone, Cheeto's gone. Tyler Boyd's going to be gone. It's, you know, there's a lot of singing to be done, Nathan.
I think Tyler Boyd is going to be at the Chiefs.
It's not a bad shout, you know. Not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
And that's going to be quite painful because, obviously, I can imagine he'd do well there with Mahomes, and you don't really want to be strengthening one of your potentially biggest rivals in the AFC, but I could see him there.
I've got one more soup or poop, actually, if you want. Did you see the story about the new swimming pool that Shad Khan is going to put on to Craven Cottage? In the Craven Cottage redevelopment, a posh hotel, an open-air swimming pool attached to one of the stands. Did you see that story?
I did indeed.
And what are you saying, soup or poop on that one?
Soup. Yeah, I mean, really? It's a bit bollocks, isn't it? It's a bit corporate wankers and all the rest of it. But I think the further you go with these stadium redevelopments, there's always someone willing to pay the money. If you're a fan of the franchise, I mean, you know, you can't tell me if Paul Brown or Paycor, as it is now known, had some fancy infinity swimming pool in the posh seats, and you could go in there on a hot day.
I would do that.
I mean, if special occasions or you got gifted it corporately, I mean, why not? You know, it's a bit of a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, the only thing, as long as you're not detracting away from the real fans and taking their seats out to replace it, but I don't mind a bit of innovation like that.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm in between a soup and a poop on that one. I just don't want to poop inside the swimming pool, Nathan. That's all I would say. Right, let's bring in Sam. And as promised, we're delighted to say that PFF's lead NFL analyst and co-host of the PFF NFL pod, Sam Monson, is making his debut on Cincinnati. Sam, welcome along. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Now, no week in the NFL is the same. You never quite know what's going to happen. This week we had the kind of up in Buffalo, the kind of night of the long knives. This incredible cull. I think you were quite vocal about the Stephon Diggs situation there. It feels like the Bills, for instance, are kind of coming to the end of a bit of a cycle and a retooling and rebuilding and all the rest of it, right, for a new tilt. Where do you see the Bengals at the moment in relation to that and where they might be in terms of cycles? And, you know, we're kind of, what, fifth year into Zach Taylor's tenure. Where do you see the Bengals at this moment in time?
Yeah, I don't know if it necessarily works like that in terms of cycles, but when you have a good quarterback on big money, it means that you're in this constant sort of juggling act of having to retool a roster around him because you have to make difficult financial decisions. You know, he's taken up a giant sum of your salary cap and there's only so much to go around, and sometimes you're going to have to make these calls that mean you get rid of a player you wouldn't normally want to get rid of. Or if you had a quarterback on, you know, the rookie contract, if you had Brock Purdy's contract, you can afford to do. So you listen to San Francisco and they're saying, yeah, we've got a bunch of big contracts already and we still want to give out another big contract to somebody like Brandon Ayuk because we can't, you know, whereas the Bengals are, say, looking at T. Higgins and saying, you know, we'd like to keep T around, but it's probably not going to happen, you know, so we can pay him one more year on the franchise tag, and then it's probably time to part ways. But as long as you have a Josh Allen or a Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes, you're in contention the whole time. It's a case of how good the roster is around him determines how strong that contention is. But those guys are all capable of getting to the playoffs pretty much every year single-handedly. And then when they're there, they're good enough that they can go on a run to take almost any team to a Super Bowl. But, you know, last year's Chiefs is a good example. Like, okay, their offense fell off a little bit. It rediscovered itself in the postseason to a degree. but they sort of stumbled into the best defense that they'd ever put around Patrick Mahomes. And suddenly when you give a guy that's already the best quarterback in the league, now he's paired with the best defense in the league, that's how you end up with a Super Bowl team. So, you know, I think the Bengals are clinging on to the last vestiges of that T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, you know, group triumvirate. And they'll probably try and do that for this last year. And then they're going to need to hope the succession plan works. And the Bengals, I think, have generally been very good, very forward thinking at future proofing various spots on the roster. Now, it doesn't mean it always works out. Even when you future proof, that guy still needs to be good. He still needs to actually be the correct answer once he gets playing time. But theoretically, you know, Charlie Jones, Yosivas, last year, they've already been picking these receivers to potentially replace T. Higgins in the future. I would imagine they'll draft another one this year because it's a great wide receiver draft, and why not? But, you know, we don't really know how that's going to work out until we see those guys on the field trying to replace somebody like T. Higgins.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think we've obviously, as fans, become very attached to that core group of players who kind of got us to the Super Bowl, into the AFC Championship game. And, it, you know, you do become emotionally attached. But, you know, this, as the phrase goes, it is a business. You have to be objective about these things. You can't keep everyone all the time. So I'm just interested in your opinion. Do you think it's a good thing that the Bengals are steadfastly kind of refusing to ship T. Higgins? They're adamant that they're going to keep him for another year, because that's not the received wisdom when it comes to franchise tagging. Once you franchise tag someone, you're generally looking for trading partners, right? So how do you feel about the Bengals' approach with T. Higgins? And I mean, do you expect anything to happen around the draft in terms of a trade there?
I think it always depends what the offers look like. You know, if you could get a first round pick for T. Higgins, I think you'd be better off trading him, you know, because I think you can do more with that first round pick. I think the value is better. But if, and it sounds like it hasn't been, that's not what the market has been. I mean, you look a couple of years ago and there wasn't a better first round draft pick spent than the one the Eagles sent to Tennessee to get A.J. Brown over, right, and pay him the contract. And okay, they gave a third round pick as well, I think, so it was even more expensive than that. But like, that was essentially taking, we need a receiver, we're going to take our first round draft pick and we're going to get a proven NFL commodity and pay him like that, rather than draft a guy. You know, T. Higgins isn't as good a receiver as A.J. Brown, but I don't know if the difference is so much that T. Higgins isn't worth a low first round pick. So, you know, I don't know if Cincinnati would ever trade with a team like Buffalo, but the Bills have number 28 and they suddenly have a massive need at wide receiver. Like, if Buffalo sent an offer in that included pick number 28 for Cincinnati, I would find that hard to turn down if I was the Bengals, for a player that I know is probably on the way out next year anyway. Even though you're accelerating the need of, you know, Yosivas or Charlie Jones or a rookie to come in and be that guy now, it's probably still, you know, if you're sort of balancing out the ledger and trying to look which is the better option, I would say you have a better chance of that working out in your favor more times than you do keeping T. Higgins just for that extra year. So, but if the offers don't look like that, you know, if the highest they've got on the table is a low second round pick or a third round pick or whatever, then they are better off keeping him and playing the one more year and, you know, letting him walk in free agency and getting a comp pick back in return. So it's always that unknown piece behind the scenes. Like, what do the offers that are coming in look like? Because that, I think, changes whether or not you're interested.
You're right. I mean, there's been lots of debate. Well, there is at the moment, because obviously we're on the eve of the draft and we wonder whether the Bengals would do something that they don't normally do, kind of wheel and deal a little bit more this year. What do you make of the Bengals offseason? Obviously, they've elected to part ways with Joe Mixon. DJ Reader hit the fan base a little bit hard. He was very popular and a terrific player. Where do you see the Bengals offseason, how that's gone?
I think it's been fine. Their offseason has been largely about, you know, staying where they are. You know, there are other teams that have tried to improve massively and take big leaps forward. There are some other teams whose big business has just been about maintenance, trying to keep, you know, where they are, not lose too many players. Yeah, DJ Reader is potentially a big loss. They did, I think, a pretty good job of mitigating that with somebody like Sheldon Rankins. So I think that can work out okay. Trent Brown coming in at right tackle should make an upgrade over what they had with Jonah Williams there. So that's a positive move. Cashing in on Joe Mixon, I think, makes some sense. That's kind of the running back version of the T. Higgins conversation we were just having. But I think generally their offseason so far has been about just sort of treading water. Let's just stay in this area, in this kind of zone of contention. Let's not do anything too drastic to undermine everything. And then, you know, the draft is upcoming where they have a bunch of draft picks, and certainly it's strong in a few different areas. So I think they're in a good spot given what they have upcoming.
And what would have got you off your seat? What kind of move would have, you know, you're in Cincinnati, PFF are in Cincinnati, and you feel the buzz around the town, and, you know, it must be fun at the moment. So I mentioned to you, baseball and MLS have started up, and the draft is just around the corner, and you know, you've got the Bearcats basketball going on, or was a week or so ago. You feel the buzz around town. What would have got you off your seat going, wow, that would have been a heck of a move?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally free agency, you know, when you're a good roster, you're usually not dipping into free agency in that way. You know, you're not going crazy for those guys. I think generally the best money spent in free agency is on those lower level free agents. It's on the more bargain basement end of things. It was a good free agent group generally, but it wasn't, you know, blockbusting. It wasn't crazy. You know, the top players, guys, I mean, if they had signed somebody like Christian Wilkins, if they'd been in that market, yeah, we'll let DJ Reader walk, but we're going to replace him with, you know, one of the best young nose tackles in the NFL for a monster sum of money. I mean, that would have been eye-opening. That would have been crazy exciting, but I don't think it was ever number one on the cards, or number two, you know, not really a sensible way for them to deploy resources, I think. I think they've done more of the more sensible approach and just gone shopping for a few of these second-tier free agents, just made sure they didn't open up any holes in the roster that they weren't anticipating before they head into the draft.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Bengals, I mean, actually, talking about DJ Reader, he was one of the more surprising additions a couple of years ago, wasn't he? No one expected that. No one expected Orlando Brown, but they tend to do things their way. Nothing too blockbustery, but perhaps enough now and again to kind of make you raise your eyebrows than rather you get out of your seat. As I mentioned, we've got the draft coming up. They've done a nice job, I think, filling holes on the roster. As you say, it's maintenance and tweaking. The only things that are missing perhaps are a nose tackle, a long-term tight end, maybe a long-term tackle as well, maybe another bit of cornerback depth, which could come in free agency still. Who knows? What about the draft? What would you be looking for the Bengals in the draft? There's some nice selections. They're a bit. Let's talk about the first round first, if we may. It's a bit of 18 is a bit of no man's landy sort of area, isn't it? Or do you think that's a good spot?
I think it can be a good spot. It obviously, when you're talking about selecting sort of that far down in the draft, it's always a little bit abstract because we've no idea how the first half of the draft is going to unfold. It could completely determine where the value is, what it looks like when you come up to pick. But I think cornerback is going to be an area in the first round at that kind of spot where you're probably going to get, that's where I think a lot of those corners are going to go, or kind of run on them is maybe going to start. I think there'll be some offensive tackle value at that point, potentially. So kind of the areas I think that they're looking at, it corresponds with where I think some of the value in that first round is going to be. And then maybe the big X factor in there is this concept of where Brock Bowers, the Georgia tight end, is going to land. He is, I think, one of the most, if position value wasn't relevant, he would be one of the top five players in this draft, but position value is relevant and tight end is not a position of value. And so tight ends tend to slip down the draft a little bit, particularly when you're looking at a draft where quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, 4, where three of the next five picks are going to be wide receivers. You know, we're basically half the top 10, most of the top 10 at this point is already assigned to wide receivers or quarterbacks. So guys like Brock Bowers, a tight end that has to fit in the next group of picks. I mean, we don't need many people to pass on him before he starts to become available at pick number 18, or at least I mean, that's an area where, you know, maybe Brock Bowers ends up sliding to 15 or something. And maybe at that point, Cincinnati looks at it and says, that's close enough that we can throw a third round pick in there and jump up a few spots and grab somebody like that. So Brock Bowers, to me, for somebody like Cincinnati, is a massive X factor in this draft, where what his position ends up being in terms of how far down that first round he slides. And is there a point where Cincinnati gets interested when he starts to slide and maybe goes after him?
I think that would make a lot of Bengals fans happy. They're interested in weapons. They're interested in giving Joe Burrow weapons. And if there is going to be a run on, say, tackles, because everything we read in here that the tackle class is really strong, there's some good edge rushers in the top 20, maybe. Like you said, there's a bunch of corners. Just depends, I guess. If there's a run on tackles, for instance, it'll push players like Bowers down a little bit, but just a case of how far down. What about a wide receiver in the first round? Would that be a Brian Thomas or a you're not going to get an Adunze or whoever, but someone like a Brian Thomas has been mentioned a few times.
Yeah, Brian Thomas is sort of emerging as the consensus number four receiver in this class. I'm lower on him than most people. I think he's more of a one-trick pony. He reminds me a little bit of Marquez Valdes-Scantling in a league that's kind of moving away from that style of receiver. You know, the league is taking away explosive plays. They're minimizing the impact that those kind of limited vertical threat guys can pose, unless he can become a more rounded receiver at the next level. I would just put my lot in with other guys. But I think where the Bengals are picking, you might have a shot at picking wide receiver four at that spot, you know, whether or not it's Brian Thomas Jr. or whether it's whoever you think wide receiver four is. The first three guys, like you said, Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, they're probably all going to go in the top 10. If not, I can't see a way any of the three ends up falling that far. But there is a gap between those three guys and the next group. And I think it's entirely possible that that gap means that the next guy selected isn't going to be, you know, until somewhere around this range. So if they are enamored by a wide receiver that's in that next group, there's a pretty good shot, I think, that they could take him at this position.
On the other side of the ball, because of the loss of DJ Reader and what he brought to the team, and the fact that they were terrible against the run, that was one of the real surprising things last year. They were terrible against the run. The need for some defensive tackle reinforcements seems pretty obvious to say, but also much needed. Have you got your eye on any sort of nose tackles and or three techniques, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, in the first round, you know, there will be interesting options at three tech. Maybe, again, either one of the top guys could be available there, whether it's Byron Murphy from Texas or Johnny Newton from Illinois. Newton's stock seems to be falling a little bit recently.
Yeah, I saw that.
Either one of those guys, I think, would be fine value in the middle of the first round. Byron Murphy, again, like in abstract terms, might be worth more than that, but just because of that dynamic we talked about, where most of the top 10 is going to be quarterbacks and wide receivers, somebody like him is going to get pushed down the first round a little bit, and the Bengals might take him there. Nose tackle, I think there's some kind of interesting options. The other Texas defensive tackle, Tavondre Sweat, this 366-pound monster who can rush the passer a bit. There's a little bit of sort of DJ Reader in him in terms of he's not just a run defender. Like, that's where he's best, but he can impact the pass game and he can generate some pressure, at least enough to be on the field in passing downs. And maybe his limiting factor is how much you're going to play. Like, he may only play 300-400 snaps a season, but he can make an impact in all facets of the game, which I think is probably more important in today's NFL. And then the other guy that's intriguing is Chris Jenkins Jr., the Michigan defensive tackle, son of Chris Jenkins Sr., who, you know, anyone old enough to remember was an absolute monster of a defensive tackle back in the day. He's smaller. He's not as sort of physically dominant as his dad was, but he's a really good football player and very good against the run.
Or you could go, this is the thing with the draft, isn't it? You can just go anywhere and you never pick. Hopefully, you just hope that they're going to come out well, as fans, we do, Bengals fans. You hope they're just going to come up with some good players, two or three that will hit really well. I mean, I thought they had a I've read that last year, a lot of people, or some people, have graded last year's draft quite poorly. But I'm looking at, you know, a lot of the draftees from last year contributed in the season. That's all you kind of want, right? You want them to contribute and get stuck in straight away, whether by design or by, you know, whether starters being injured or whatever. And so, yeah, that's what you hope for. Sam, thank you so much for the time. I know a lot of our guys over here tune in to your work and rate you and enjoy your stuff a lot. So thank you so much. It's going to mean a lot of people over here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Cracking stuff from Sam Monson of PFF. We'll have him back again. Really interesting stuff. Thanks to him. And Nathan, we first met in Cincinnati last year. He was good enough to show me and Alex Costa around the PFF offices. How exciting that was. So that was really cool. And it's great that Sam was able to spend some time, because it's like really busy for these guys this time of year. So fantastic stuff. Right, we've got a few correspondences and then we're going to get out of here. Jamie at Trequart Bista, we should trade back into the first round, into the mid first round. He says, I think he means trade up, and do it using picks on day two. Let's get two of those really talented guys. What do you think about the idea of trading up in that first round? Well, we're not going to do a soup or poop on it, but you know, what do you think? I think it's a good idea, but the Bengals never do that.
I think it'd be interesting. There's certainly some great players knocking around in that kind of mid-teens range. I mean, I was doing some research earlier before we did the podcast about sort of the names realistically that are going to be coming to us. And there's a lot of players there, because potentially four, potentially even five quarterbacks could go before 18. You get some great talent flooding down to us in that sort of position. But I don't know. I mean, I can see it. In terms of, like, from my perspective, would I do it and be aggressive? Yes, possibly. But the way the Bengals operate, they always just like to sort of store things up, don't they? I think they're more likely to use one of those picks to trade up in like the third or fourth round, you know, package a bit up there than they would to get up into the first round, because it'd be fairly expensive, wouldn't it, for them to get up? And they never like giving picks away in future years. So
no, they don't. No, no.
Yeah, don't mind it, because at the end of the day, you need a D tackle or someone on that D line to bolster it fairly early on, that can play fairly early on as well. That's not just going to be a sort of prospect fourth rounder. And you need a right tackle for the future. That's the other thing, isn't it? You need to get younger there. And frankly, also, we probably need a wide receiver that's going to be playing somewhat extensively, you'd like to think, from the year after, when whatever happens with T. Higgins shakes out. So there's a few holes there. And I think once you get into the third round, middle of the third round, there's no guarantees whatsoever, is there? Nor is there in one and two, but you've got a bit more security.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they could go anywhere. What's the interesting thing for me about this draft is... What position the run is going to be at? You know, this class, this right, this tackle class is supposed to be pretty legendary. So will there be a run on tackles early doors? And if so, what's that? That's going to leave us some really interesting players. Most notably, as you say, at the defensive tackle position. A lot of Bengals fans love the prospect of drafting Brock Bowers at tight end. Could he fall all the way to us? I'm not so sure. But if there is a big run on tackles, then I tell you one. Okay, this is my hot take and bold statement, whatever you want to call it, for this episode. Watch out for cornerbacks. I think there's going to be some cornerbacks there. And even though it's not like a pressing need, if you get someone at 18 that falls to you who is graded at number 8 or 9 on your board, then what are you going to do? You know, and you know, did you trust DJ Turner enough last year to become a, you know, you've just lost Cheeto. Watch out for cornerback. I'm not saying they're going to, but I'm just saying if there's a run on tackles, then you'll get positions like cornerback falling to us in that kind of range. So, yeah, top 10 player. We might get a top 10 graded player who's a cornerback, and he might suddenly become a starter, and then suddenly our secondary looks much more secure and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading a few people today writing about that. I think Cooper DeJean.
I don't know. We've got to play the name game. That's also coming up at some point.
That's going to be spectacular as well. Some of the names.
There's some crackers this year, aren't there?
There's a few people saying that they think he's going to go much earlier in the draft than people think. There's always those rises and fallers, isn't there? You get all the mock drafts that basically solidify what you think the rough sort of order and draft range for some of these people is. And at the moment, most drafts have him going sort of from 20 onwards.
Yeah.
And a few people are saying they reckon that he could quite easily rise up some boards nearer the draft.
Yeah, there's also going to be some trades. People will panic and go, oh my God, you know, we need a tackle really badly. And that's the whole point of signing someone like a Trent Brown. It doesn't make it an absolute need, but we do. I think a tackle would be my preferred option there. But if like a Terrion Arnold or a Quinion Mitchell, two top rated cornerbacks, Nate Wiggins perhaps even, Cooper DeJean maybe. I'm going with DeJean for now. Kool-Aid McKinstry, there's one for the name game.
Ages.
So those guys, you know, certainly Mitchell and Arnold, if they fell to 18, you might snap their hands off, you know. I don't know. It's just an idea. I'm not saying they will, I'm not saying they should, but I just they've never shied away from drafting a cornerback in the first round, and yeah, you can't have enough good cornerbacks, I think. So, anyway, right, Chris Roberts at 1066. Chris, with all the chat about drafting Brock Bowers at 18, if he's still there, I think the priority is to protect Joe by drafting a right tackle in round one and then pick a potential T replacement wide receiver on day two. I agree with Chris. What about you, Nathan? You down with that idea?
I, as much as Bowers is a sexy pick and you get a really quality tight end that might be here for a long time, I just don't think the Bengals are going to turn up a much bigger need. You're also, for this year coming up, what are you going to do? You've got Brock Bowers, you've got a great deal on, and everyone's really excited about him. You've also got Mike Gesicki, I'm really high on. I'm just not sure you're going to use those in tandem too much when you've got T and Jamar Chase out there. There's only so many players that can catch the ball. I don't think that'd be a great use of the pick, to be honest, as much as it would be a shirt seller and it would be quite exciting, certainly for the long term there. I mean, if he could play at the level of like a Sam Laporta or someone like that, you know, Jesus Christ, him and Chase alongside Burrow for the foreseeable, you'd be very excited. But
would you expect I'm expecting Gesicki to be used almost like a slot receiver, right? I think that's the expectation. Yeah. Even though he says, you know, he's not as bad at blocking as everyone says, but I mean, I potentially would use him more of a slot than a regular inline tight end, you know. I would look at a wide receiver on day two, because I just think the depth is really great there, you know, and I think it will be going forward, and that's why I'm not super scared of losing T, as much as I love T Higgins as a player and as a guy. I just think the depth at wide receiver, certainly for the past 2 or 3 years, and I think going forward, there's some absolute beasts there, you know. Quick,
yeah.
6'3", 6'4". It just ridiculous specimens of humans, you know.
And well, I mean, there's three receivers in there at the start of the draft that are all, you know, I think most people are saying that all three of them will be the number one receiver in almost any class. And because it's going to be a run on quarterbacks, you might be able to get one of those three guys in the first, you know.
Who are we looking at? We're looking at Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, Neighbors.
We're looking at Malik Neighbors. And
yeah.
Rome Odunze, is that how you pronounce it? Those three guys. But then you've got Brian Thomas. I've seen Brian Thomas mocked to us at 18.
I have, yeah.
Adonai Mitchell as well, and Troy Franklin, and Xavier Leggett, and Keon Coleman, and Roman Wilson, Xavier Worthy, you know, all you just rattle off. There's basically a wide receiver, a type of receiver for whatever you want. So, I mean, what would you, well, I was going to say.
I mean, that's the thing we haven't discussed, but that's what everyone's talking about. I think there's an actual chance they do, but I think it's very, very risky unless you get one of those top three receivers the other way. And then you're going to have to give up T plus probably your second or maybe even your first round pick to get up there, probably your first. So to me, it wouldn't be.
I don't know, man. I mean, I wouldn't be against trading T. I don't think it'll happen just because the Bengals are the Bengals. They don't engage in this kind of wheeling, dealing shenanigans, don't they? It would be quite sensational if they did. You look at the Chiefs and L'Jarius Sneed, their sort of Pro Bowl cornerback. He was put on the franchise tag, but he was traded to the Titans, who Brian Callahan's new team got him. So, you know, there is it. I think for any other team, putting a player like T. Higgins on the tag, there is an expectation that they'll trade him. But I don't think there is with the Bengals. I just think that they are absolutely invested in having T. on the team one more year, for good or for bad. You know, I don't know. Would they consider? It just depends on what's being offered. I don't think they'd want to trade him for anything less than a first rounder. And I think they might be in trouble with that because the wide receiver draft is so deep. You know, it sort of takes away some of the leverage, actually.
I think, like I've said before, I think you'd be foolish as a team to give up a first round pick for T. Higgins. I think you probably better use that money and cap for your team than to go with a player like that. I think there's, so like you said, there's so many good young receivers out there. It wouldn't be for me. I think if we could get even a top second round for him, you'd have a think about it. But the problem is you need someone to come in and play at that level. We're built to win now.
Yeah,
you need to be able to play now. Like, if we're going to give up a guy who's a, you know, for me, he's a number one / number two receiver, T. Higgins. He's right on the periphery. I think a lot of teams, he'd probably be their number one. A lot of teams, he'd be their number two. But he's great. He's a great locker room guy. We know what he can bring to the table. He's got a couple of questionable knocks on can he stay on the field. But aside from that, he's brilliant. And if we go and get a second round pick, even an early second round pick, that player may not contribute for a long time. You know, you look at Drew Sample that was drafted at the top of the second round, even Jackson Carmen, you know, sort of middle of the second round, flat out bust in the case of Jackson Carmen, not a great contributor in Drew Sample, just turned into a sort of fairly okay, consistent-ish player. But that is nowhere near the level of someone like T. Higgins. There's a degree of a gamble there. And for me, the situation we're in now, unless we're getting, you know, we're trading that second or whatever pick, you know, and another pick, a second and a fourth and T to get up into the first round and get someone, you know, in the top 10, like a Neighbors or a Dunze or someone like that, then it's like, yep, cool. You know, they might be able to come in and, you know, they might not be at T. Higgins' level straight away, but that you can certainly see the long-term value of having a quality receiver on a rookie contract to pair with Ja'Marr Chase. That's exciting. That, you know, is going to help Joe Burrow out a lot. But outside of that, I think it's too much of a gamble for me, and I'd just rather keep T and move forward from there.
Well, again, we could rage about this. I'm more inclined to keep him for a year. Like you say, the chemistry's there. I fully expect him to hold out a little bit over the summer, but I wouldn't put it past him to draft someone quite high as his replacement. I mean, why not? The depth is there this year. You could kind of get him some snaps, learn the job, and off he goes. You know. So, in terms of right tackle, I'm absolutely there with you, Chris. And there's a reason. As much as we talk about depth in the wide receiver class this year, I think the depth drops off a little bit, in fact quite significantly, once you get, I mean, we're not going to draft Joe Alt, he's going to go top 10 I think, but once you get past Fashanu, Latham, Fuaga, Fortanu, Mims, then, you know, and I think there will be a run on those guys, so the top 6 I expect to go you know, around the anywhere from about 8 to 15, you know what I mean? So I'm hoping that one of those guys will drop to 18. But then from what I understand, the quality goes off a little bit. And so, yeah, I'm more inclined to draft a tackle in the first round to make sure you give us the best chance of getting someone that can really become a starter in the next year or so, you know. So that's my approach, I think.
Yeah, and the line needs to get younger as well, doesn't it? We need sort of finally to develop our own talent on the offensive line.
Yeah, because like Ted's going to be comes to this is the final year of both Kappa and Karras's contract this year. They're both going to, well, certainly Ted's going to be in his 30s end of this year. So we do need to start to planning both tackle and, I would say, interior. Don't discount an interior lineman in this draft. But then again, you could say that for everywhere, really. But right, okay. UK Cincinnati fan at Bengal 90. I'm fascinated to see how the new kickoff changes, like draft and back ends of rosters with a likely targeting of run defending linebackers, blocking tight ends, more RBs, and especially paving the way for the return of the fullback. And I think that's it. It's almost these kickoff returns are almost like running plays, aren't they? You know, because you've got almost the two lines of teams there, in almost like a scrimmage situation. Do you know what I mean?
Who's returning for us? Charlie Jones?
All right, and Charlie Jones. I'd stick Chase Brown and Charlie Jones back there. They're both the two speedsters, you know. But like I said earlier, you know, the Steelers have picked up Patterson, who's a quite a big chap, but he would be perfect.
He's got older now,
doesn't he? Yeah, he is, yeah. But and the Chiefs have snapped up the Welsh dude. Because he's got a bit of speed about him. He's got experience of running through lines, you know, on the rugby pitch, you know. So
where's John Ross these days?
Well, I think he might be a bit too slight for that kind of thing. But I say, if you break through that line, you're gone. You're basically gone. There's no other line of defence apart from that first line. So as soon as if you can get through, then it's good night Vienna, basically. So it is going to be interesting to see whether, as Bengal 90 says, you know, how that's going to alter people's approach in the draft. Whether they're going to pick up a few more sort of, you know, blocking type people for that specific, you know, because you don't need gunners anymore. You just need blockers and tacklers, yeah. You know. So, yeah, very interesting. Well, Nathan, that's about it. Thank you for going along with Soup or Poop. As I said to you earlier, we might have some news about our trip to Cincinnati this year. We certainly have the British draft panel in a couple of days' time. And also we're planning ahead for our 250th episode. Huge thanks to Sam Monson from PFF for joining us. And until the next time, it is a hoo day from me.
And a hoo day from me. Cheers, guys.
And it should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.